Good evening, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website, which is www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions or would like to connect with us, you can simply post a question on our wall on Facebook, send a tweet to @TheOrganicView, or contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. This evening's show is brought to you by Eden Foods, the most trusted name in certified organic clean food. Shop online at edenfoods.com and enter the coupon code ORGVIEW, that's ORGVIEW, when prompted during checkout to receive 20% off any regularly priced items, excluding cases. For other promotional offers, please visit theorganicview.com's website.
Tonight I'll be talking to 3B advocates, Jeff Anderson, Tom Theobald, and Tiffany Fink Haynes, about the White House's strategy to save bees. For those that are familiar with Jeff Anderson's work, he is the owner of California Minnesota Honey Farms, which is a commercial migratory beekeeping operation. Jeff also represents the beekeeping industry on the National Beekeeping Advisory Board and the National Pollinator Defense Fund. Also joining me tonight is Tom Theobald, a commercial beekeeper and also a bee advocate from the state of Colorado. Tiffany Fink-Haynes is the head of the BeeAction.org campaign for Friends of the Earth. All three advocates will be discussing the pros and cons of this strategy. So first, I would like to welcome to the show Jeff Anderson, Tom Theobald, and Tiffany Fink-Haynes. Good evening, everyone.
Hello, June.
And thanks for having us on,
Joe. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine this evening. Thanks for inviting us on.
You're very welcome. And Tiffany, how are you this evening?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having us on, June.
You're very welcome. Now, the way that I'm going to conduct tonight's discussion, I'll begin by addressing some questions to Jeff Anderson, and then I'll continue by addressing the rest of the panel. So Tom and Jeff, because there are two male voices that people won't be able to differentiate necessarily, could you just announce who you are before you answer the question?
Sure.
The first question is going to go to Jeff. Jeff, what is your take on the recent news from the White House?
Jeff here, and could you please repeat the question, Joan?
Sure. Jeff, what is your take on the recent news from the White House about this strategy to save honeybees?
Yeah, the White House during Pollinator Week here announced a new initiative to kind of help sort out the issues around the abnormal mortality that's going on in the bee industry. And there's some real positives in that, and there's some other issues that, as a beekeeper, I wish they would address in more depth.
Thank you. Jeff, will this increase land for foraging?
Yes. The initiative does address quite a bit on forage. There's some there's going to be additional lands made available for bee forage on CRP lands that are in conservation reserve. There's some interest in planting some of our road right-of-ways with pollinator-friendly forage. I believe the military is even going to be involved. There's some talk about planting additional forage on lands that the military manages. And I'm sure there's several other areas as well. I know there's the White House has been trying to draw in other private entities as well. There's some talk of actually lands that airports and utilize would also be involved in additional forage areas.
And Jeff, will this strategy help commercial migratory beekeepers such as yourself?
Well, location is everything, and if you happen to be located next to a major thoroughfare where they plant a ditch right away, it could be helpful. For a lot of beekeepers such as myself, the only access that our bees will have to forage lands would come in the form of the CRP that would be planted, and a lot of it would depend on how many farmers are encouraged to actually get into the CRP program that encourage pollinator forage.
Thank you. Jeff, do you think that the White House can get the USDA and EPA to come to a conclusion that neonicotinoids should be banned in 180 days?
Well, they haven't come to that conclusion since 2003 or whenever they started getting pressure from the public to relook at the issue. But the initiative, the presidential initiative, it does actually ask the EPA to come to some sort of conclusion by this fall, 180 days. I, for one, am very skeptical that the EPA can react that fast, but that is in the initiative.
Thank you. Now, my next question is to both Jeff and Tom. Jeff, could you begin responding first? Now, the announcement includes a plan for EPA to implement a better risk assessment. What do you recommend that EPA do in order to achieve this, given their track record?
Thanks for asking about risk assessment, Jeff, here. And in my opinion, EPA risk assessment is not perfect. The EPA is asking, the president's initiative is asking EPA to improve risk assessment. There are new chemistries that have much different modes of action than some of our traditional pesticides that we've used in the past. And so it's quite appropriate that the president would ask EPA to get a risk assessment program that would identify the risks of these new novel actions of pesticides. However, along with that, I think the initiative misses some points because while they are asking for improved risk assessment, the initiative fails to look at the broader picture, which would include the lay pesticides. And it would also include the management in the field by actual compliance and enforcement activities by EPA and their partners.
The risk
Thank
assessment
you.
Has, excuse me, the risk assessment has been an issue from the beginning, and there's a whole division that does the risk assessment, environmental effects and fate and effects division, and they really have done their job fairly well, and I think the best example of that is clothianidin, which is one of the neonicotinoid pesticides that's in question. In 2003, they wanted to require a field study of the dangers to honeybees before that chemical was registered, and they took that position because of horrible consequences that had come from these systemic pesticides in France, where they were banned in 1999. Very sensible approach. Well, that lasted for about 2 months, and they were forced into agreeing to a conditional registration, the condition being that a field study, a life cycle study it was called, be conducted to determine the effects that these chemicals, in this case clothianidin, would have on the bees, on the queen, on the larva. They knew very well what the potential problems were, and they called, for label language that was not included, but they called for a label language that said the following: this compound is toxic to honeybees. The persistence of residues and the expression of clothianidin in nectar and pollen suggests the possibility of chronic toxic risk to honeybee larvae and the eventual stability of the hive. The problem with the risk assessment is the risk assessors are simply ignored. their risk assessment is disregarded. And we apparently have a management that at best is incompetent, at worst corrupt or even criminal. So the risk assessment has failed because the risk assessors are not being listened to. They're just being disregarded and dismissed.
Thank you, Tom. Now, one of the things, or one of the comments, should I say, that many people are saying in regards to this whole announcement is that it's going to create a lot of jobs. Could you comment on that?
Well, I can't see where it's going to create many jobs. I mean, at most what they're talking about is $50 million, and that hasn't even been allocated. It's just at the talking stage. And they're talking about that money going for research. Well, the research is going to go to people who are already researching, and they may benefit a little bit, but that $50 million, if it ever materializes, is not likely to produce any jobs, in my view. I don't know. Jeff may have a different perspective.
I can't see it producing lots of jobs. There might, if we start planning ditch right-of-ways and stuff, there might be some short-term work while that's in progress. But as far as creating long-term jobs, I don't see it either.
Now, let me ask you both a question. How many beekeepers have, especially multi-generation beekeepers, have gone out of business because of the consistent use of these systemic pesticides over the course of the last couple of years?
Jeff, do you want to take that?
Well, that's a really good question, and I don't really have a good answer for that. I do know that there's a number of bee operations that are precarious and sitting in kind of precarious positions right now financially because of the heavy losses that a lot of us have taken. And I do know a few that have actually gone out of business. But for the most part, a lot of the bee operations are positioned but still hanging on. And so if we can turn this around, we can slow up the mortality, we can increase some of the forage. All those things are good things here. But the other thing that we need to consider here is it has to be safe forage for the bees.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that a little bit if I could, because that's of great concern to me. We have seen significant contamination of both soil and water throughout the world, wherever these chemicals have been used, and certainly where they've been used repeatedly. And yet the USDA and the EPA have very carefully avoided evaluating that. This is another issue that the risk assessors brought up, that this should have been done. They recommended that in 2003, and to my knowledge, it's yet to be done. We don't know what the levels of these contaminations are, but they're likely to be very high. The five states that are targeted by this habitat improvement are the major Midwestern states. That's where most of the bees go, at least in the summer. And that's where most of this systemic pesticide has been poured into the land and the water. And the proposal by the EPA is to take $8 million and create habitat that's going to save the bees. Now, I don't mean to demean them. This is certainly a step in the right direction. But what that works out to, if you look at how much it costs to plant an acre of ground, it works out to about 1 acre per 10 square miles. And it's even worse than that, because that 1 acre is going to be in one of those five Midwestern states that has probably been heavily contaminated with these poisons, and that proposed habitat may in fact be a killing field. So there's a lot more work that needs to be done here. I'd like to broach a subject, and Jeff can address it a little bit, but it's my understanding that none of these deliberations at this point have involved any of the beekeeping leadership, either as consultants or advisors or participants. Or is that true, Jeff?
Well, it's partially true because the White House did call in the industry leadership when they were initially planning this initiative. So they did listen fairly closely and thoroughly to some of the needs of the bee industry. But I think what you're referring to, Tom, has to do with the plan forward. The president has asked quite a wide variety of people to become involved in this, all the way up to, like, leader of Homeland Security. We have, I forget, about a dozen different bureaucracies. We have the military involved. But yet, there are, you're right, Tom, to my knowledge, there's no no input from the bee industry in consulting as to how the program is working, if the best, we're using the land in the best way, the types of plantings to put down, all that is being decided by non-beekeepers.
I have a question for actually either Jeff or Tom. Considering the fact that during the last term, four GMO crops were deregulated, how do you propose that they can to, I don't even know if they can do anything, because in essence, once they let the genie out of the bottle, what can you really do at this particular point?
I'm not sure I understand the question. June, could you say that again?
In regards to what their plan is to protect the bees, last term, four GMO crops were deregulated. GMOs are the companion technology to neonicotinoids. What do you see happening with this term, with this initiative, as far as that's concerned?
Well, my view is that the only answer to this, the ultimate answer, is to remove these systemic chemicals from the market. They never should have been approved in the first place, and if the regulatory system had been operating as it should, they wouldn't have been. They may represent the most hideous environmental poisoning that we've ever witnessed, and all we get is cover-ups and avoidance and evasion and excuses. The public needs to look into this because their welfare is at risk as much as that of the beekeepers.
Thank you. Now, my next question is for Tiffany. Tiffany, can you share with our listeners some of the recommendations that Friends of the Earth has made in regards to this proposal?
Sure. So before the White House released its federal strategy, Friends of the Earth and over a dozen allies submitted policy recommendations to the White House, decisive action to be taken on neonicotinoids, asking that the White House use independent, and the administration, I should say, use independent field-relevant data. We called for reform of policies for restriction and potential suspension of neonicotinoid use. We asked that all labels are up to date. And also called for the support of research for safer alternatives and resources and incentives for farmers to protect bees from neonicotinoids.
Thank you. Tiffany, can you also elaborate as far as the efforts that Friends of the Earth has made to encourage retailers to label products that have been treated with or containing neonicotinoids?
Sure. So recently, Friends of the Earth and the Pesticide Research Institute released a report which found 36 out of 71 bee-friendly garden plants, so 51% of plants, contained neonicotinoids with no warning to consumers. Plants were tested in 18 cities across the U.S. and Canada, and all of the samples where neonics were detected indicate potential to significant harm for bees and even death in bees. And further, we found that 40% of the positive samples contain two or more neonicotinoids. So what this study is showing is that it's a snapshot of the marketplace, and it's suggesting that the problem is widespread and many gardeners have no idea that their garden could potentially be a source of harm. So in response to this study, we're calling on retailers to get neonicotinoids out of their nursery plants and off their shelves as soon as possible. More than 500,000 people have signed petitions demanding that Lowe's and Home Depot, because they're some of the largest home improvement retailers in the country, stop selling neonicotinoids. And what we're seeing is that in the face of mounting scientific evidence and growing consumer demand, we are seeing some movement in the marketplace. So Home Depot, BJ's Wholesale Club, and other retailers are taking steps to restrict neonicotinoid use and address the problem. So, for example, Home Depot announced it will require all of its suppliers to label all of its plants treated with neonicotinoids by the end of 2014, and it's working with its suppliers to find alternatives. And BJ's is a retailer that has over 200 stores in 15 states on the East Coast. So it has a fairly large supply chain, and it announced that it will require vendors to remove neonicotinoids from its plants by the end of 2014 and or require the vendors to label the plants that have been treated with neonicotinoids. So, you know, on one hand, we're pleased that retailers are beginning to work to be part of the solution to the bee crisis, but we also will continue to work with these retailers to make sure that they're really getting neonicotinoids out of their plants and off their shelves as soon as possible, because it's really necessary that we take immediate action to address this problem. So for consumers who are left wondering what they can do because they, you know, don't want their backyards to be a source of harm for bees, they should really be buying organic plants and starts and seedlings and demanding that retailers stop selling pesticides and plants pre-treated with potential harmful chemicals.
Thank you. Now, a lot of people kind of feel that, well, this by the White House is a victory and, you know, it's time to just let the White House do its thing. Do you have any comments about that? I'd like to begin with Jeff.
Well, obviously, 4-H is, nobody can argue with adding additional 4-H. But I think the other part of that is, and Tom and I talked about it briefly earlier, and that is that it has to be safe 4-H. And we really need to focus on the fact that a large portion of the pollinators in this country, particularly the managed pollinators, honeybee colonies, are going to have to continue to live in and amongst agriculture, and this initiative does little to nothing to address that issue.
Thank you. Tom, could you comment?
I certainly think that it's a step in the right direction, and as concerned as I am, I have to be an optimist and hope that it will be productive in the end and that some of these things that we're concerned about will be changed, and they will involve the beekeeping leadership and they will make some sensible decisions. We've been very discouraged up to this point because it's been largely rhetoric in place of substance, and my hope is that this isn't just more of that.
And Tiffany.
Sure. So I agree with Tom and Jeff that there's potential for this to be a step in the right direction, but I think what we've seen over many years and, you know, even within just the last 2 weeks is that there is a really large and growing body of science that's telling us we need to take immediate action. So, you know, several weeks ago, a global body of independent scientists conducted a meta-study concluding we need to immediately take regulatory action to restrict neonicotinoids. The New York Times editorial board released an article reemphasizing that we are experiencing a second silent spring. And even just today, a new study was published in Nature linking declining bird populations to neonicotinoids. So while this federal strategy does look at assessing and potentially restricting neonicotinoids within the next 6 months, what we should be doing is restricting them now. So, pollinators are in crisis, and the administration should immediately prevent the release and use of these pesticides.
Yes, I agree. I think this calls for executive action. I don't think we need to look forward so much as look back and deal with some of these decisions that have been made inappropriately, and the people who made them should be dealt with. You know, the concern is that in 180 days, what we're going to get is we're going to get a recommendation for another task force, because this mystery is even greater than we thought it was, and we need even more research money. The cynics among us would say that this task force has put the foxes in charge of the chicken coop to find out just why we're losing all these chickens, and we're skeptical.
Now, Tom, if you could just elaborate a little more on this very subject, what kind of message does this send to our friends in Europe who have taken a more aggressive position on neonicotinoids?
Well, I think the ones that I talk to can't believe that we continue to allow this to go on. There's not unanimous agreement on everything in Europe, but they look to the United States and wonder why a country as large as this can't act more sensibly.
Now, on that note, what message does it send to our friends in Australia?
Boy, I'm not sure about that, June. I don't know. They're experiencing the same problems that we are. There's been a great effort to cover it up. The chemical companies still proclaim that Australia is free of the varroa mite, which the chemical companies would like to pin all these problems on. Australia is free of the varroa mite, and yet they're not having any problems, and they use the systemic pesticides, and that's just simply not the case. If you talk to the beekeeping community and if you read some of the things that they've said and written, they are having horrible problems wherever they're exposed to these systemic pesticides, just as beekeepers are all around the globe.
Thank you. And Jeff, do you have any final comments?
I think we've pretty well covered it here, June. I guess my parting thought is that, you know, I would like to be optimistic. I mean, beekeepers are farmers, and farmers are always optimistic. I'm taking a wait-and-see approach on this a little bit, because I see some potential for some real gains here, and I see that this could be more rhetoric. And we don't need rhetoric. We need action.
I agree.
I couldn't have said it better. Yeah. Well, we are out of time. I just want to say thank you so much to our guest advocate, Jeff Anderson. Thank you so much for coming on the show this evening.
You're welcome.
Tom, thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to talk about these things.
And lastly, Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks so much, June, for having us.
And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer for the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great evening.